Well, all right. How about apologetics in Paul's writings? So we had Luke. Now let's see if Paul has addressed apologetics in anything else that he's written. Considering he wrote, you know, more than half the New Testament, it's probably a good place to go. Well, closely related to Paul's thoughts in his Athenian address in his arguments in Romans 1, Paul takes over Hellenistic Jewish apologetics here on the folly of the Gentile culture. Chapter 1 is, and the first half of chapter 2 deals with this. He then argues that the Jews are not above the same sins as the Gentiles, which is the second half of chapter 2. Romans, of course, is a masterclass in philosophical thought and writing, but his flow in Romans for the first 12 chapters is just phenomenal to read and to lay out and to write down and just try and formalize it. It's a really good experience just to write Romans and just kind of have it flow in a written form and see what Paul is doing. Well, according to Paul, God's existence and divinity are clearly revealed in nature. All human beings, he says, knew God, but they suppressed the truth, refusing to acknowledge God and falling then into idolatry instead. So all people worship, all people should worship the known God. They don't want to acknowledge this. It's been clearly revealed in looking up to the night sky and seeing the complexity of creation, or looking inward and seeing the complexity of the cells and what they understood of life at the time of that writing. Even more so today, we should be awestruck even more. And they've instead have taken down God from his rightful position in their hearts and put up any known, whether it be idols of man-made wood and stone carvings, the Greek pantheon, or they put up a mirror and worship themselves. So it could be any number of things put in place of God becomes an idol.
All right, exactly. And so they point out here that the statement that people knew God, right, verse 21, has been understood in two ways. First, it may mean that all people once knew God, but don't any longer. Right? So obviously from the beginning, people knew God, right, as a result of the beginning of creation. So all people knew God. So it could be considered, you know, the idea that at one time everybody knew God, and now, of course, they no longer know. That's one way to look at it. In fact, on a couple of occasions in the New Testament, Paul talks about Gentiles not knowing God. I think he's talking about it in a different sense here, but that's one way. Secondly, they point out that this term "knew God" may mean that all people in some limited sense know God, but refuse to worship him properly. And they suggest that in support of this view, it's been pointed out that the godless must know something about God in order to suppress the truth about him and refuse to acknowledge, right? So that seems to be what's going on here with regard to this particular expression of knowing God. Now, what they're going to suggest, as you'll mention here in just a second, they're going to say, well, you can kind of see it in terms of both perspectives here.
Sure. Right. These two views can be reconciled in some fashion. Well, the true knowledge of God, in which one knows God, not merely knows that there is a God of some kind, was once had by all people, but no longer. That's absolutely true, according to our belief system. Well, but then all human beings continue to know that there is a God and continue to be confronted with internal and external evidence for his deity. But generally speaking, they suppress or subvert this knowledge into idolatrous religion of varying kinds. And again, suppression, the basketball in the pool, you can keep it under, you need to hold it down, and it's a effort, but in some fashion, you're still having physical contact with the ball in order to suppress it. And so in some fashion, the image of God still cries out to the people that they can have trust in the continuation of the scientific approach to understand that the things that happen today will continue on to be like the things of tomorrow in certain categories, that you can have a confidence that the logic on Alpha Centauri will not change according to the logic here on Earth. And then if you murder somebody in the Bahamas, doesn't mean that it's okay where it's not seen as okay in Alaska. So the scientific, logical, and ethical approach of God is communicated through humanity in his image. Although, and what we covered a little bit last time in our last book, the noetic effect of sin has subverted that quite severely. So while unbelievers still can use those things and have confidence in those things, they don't have confidence as far as having a reason for trusting in them. So they can do them, but as for having a consistent worldview that accommodates and explains them, it's not there.
Yeah, good. And then finally, they say, with regard to Paul, Paul's letters elsewhere repeatedly deal with the apologetic issues that arose as both Jews and pagans who had confessed Christ and become associated with the churches that Paul founded developed radically different interpretations of the meaning of Christ. And so Paul has to deal with those and meet objections and explanations and that sort of thing.